Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You are listening to Troubadours and Raconteurs with E.W. Conundrum Demure on Radio Free Brooklyn. Welcome to episode 266 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's program, we feature a conversation with good friend and social organizer Casey R. Pegg. Casey and I discuss social justice, some of his travels. We talk about gender a bit as well. It's a great conversation with Casey R. Pegg. We also have an EW essay by yours truly titled BU, and another beautifully crafted and wonderfully read essay by our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, a.k.a. Uncle Cesare, titled A Sentimental Education. We have a poem as well called Quite Long. And all of this, of course, as is always the case, will be imbued with the energy of several great tunes. Let's get to it. Episode 266 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. I am not sure what matters more, you or me, he or she, they or them or we. The sentiment posturing on a notion that every person has a right to be whoever they are seems fair, doesn't it? Though we all would agree that one shouldn't be causing hurt or harm. Now, right here must come the charm, so that I don't piss you off and lose you. What in a person's being their true self could cause hurt or harm? Does confusing people by not abiding our social norms do it? Does one contradicting their physical anatomy do it? Does requesting adamantly a different sort of acceptance or classification, making others unduly perplexed and uncomfortable? Maybe everyone should fit in, regardless of personal proclivity and feeling to do something else, to be someone other than what has been physically and culturally defined as their self. Though I don't think that sounds like freedom. The other day, a close young relative of mine said to me that he was bisexual and didn't know what to do. With little confidence and much concern, I fluttered to say, "Just be you."
Value. I know my place.
Hello, Casey Pegg, is that you?
It is I. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours once again.
My pleasure as always. Good to hear from you. It's been a while.
It has been. It has been. But for those of you, for those who haven't heard you speak on the program, let me share a little background. Here we go. Casey Pegg has long been interested in personal and social transformation. Born in Western Pennsylvania, Casey has studied philosophy and psychology and went on to earn a graduate degree in the study of mysticism and religious experience at the University of Kent in Canterbury, UK. While overseas, Casey became involved in a number of social movements and lived in various protest camps, squats, and intentional communities. Since returning to the United States, Casey has worked with a variety of environmental justice organizations. In 2014, they received a community organizer training through Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, a.k.a. MORE, which is what made them decide to become a professional social justice organizer. Casey is also one of the founding members of the Central Susquehanna Valley Showing Up for Racial Justice chapter, a steering committee member of Mondragon Books, an independent, some might say radical, bookstore in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Casey recently founded Listen Up, a grassroots social justice organization, and is also co-host of a new podcast, Shouts and Whispers, about social change, spirituality, art, and culture. Casey is passionate about animal rights, likes to cook, draw, and write, and is gender non-binary, hence the use of the pronoun they to describe them. Ladies and gentlemen, it's nice again to introduce to you Casey R. Pegg on the program. So, Casey, let's get right into it. Your introduction was pretty impressive. It's nice to have a person of your experience and vision on the program, and I want you to kind of start us from back a bit when you were in the UK. You talk about being involved in intentional communities and squats. Explain that a bit, would you?
Sure. So I got my religious studies degree in Canterbury, England, and when I was an undergrad at the University of Pittsburgh, I got really interested in social justice. I was involved with the campus women's organization and a few other things. And so I guess I decided that my two main interests in life were spirituality and social change. So I decided to go get a degree in the study of mysticism and religious experience to kind of fulfill the one desire. And then while I was over there, I also kind of had a political awakening, which wasn't really planned, but I hosted some people at my place in England through couch surfing, and a lot of the people that I hosted were activists, and they started telling me about stuff that was going on in the UK. And so I eventually got involved with the climate camp movement, which was a anarchist-informed environmental justice project where every year they would kind of take over a piece of land at a site in the UK where there was some type of environmental injustice taking place. The first one I went to was to protest the construction of a new coal-fired power station. This was back in 2000, either 2007 or 2008. My memory's a little fuzzy about that. And I met a lot of people through that. And after I finished my degree, I also met my girlfriend at the time, who I was with for 3 years. So in that time period, I traveled around the UK and other places in Europe. I lived in a in like a squatted eco village in London for a period of time. I lived in a community in Copenhagen where they were trying to build a floating eco village in the bay, basically, and various other collective houses and protest camps related to environmental stuff, and also even back before the war in Syria, immigration was a huge issue in Europe. So I also participated in a lot of migrant justice actions as well. So that's the long and short of it, basically.
And when this is going on, basically you're in your 20s, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I was like, I was in like the latter half of my 20s.
And then you move back to the U.S. and you start finding and starting communities that are similar to what you experienced in the UK, it seems to me.
Yeah, I would say more finding than starting. I was really nervous when I moved back because I really had lost touch with a lot of things that were happening in the United States. And I was just like, oh man, is it going to be different? Like, am I going to find things to get engaged with? And as soon as I came back, I immediately got pulled into the anti-fracking movement. I had heard things while I was over in Europe, but I didn't really, know the magnitude of the problem. I've been involved with that type of stuff ever since.
And you mentioned a couple of groups and the bookstore as well. You're kind of involved in. I don't know if I pronounced the bookstore right. The name is it Mondragon or Mondragon or books? How did it?
I think Mondragon. Mondragon maybe.
Mondragon.
I mean, actually, it's a Spanish word, so technically it would be Mondragon. I think
Mondragon.
This
is a radical bookstore. You and I met at a radical book fair a few years back. And all of what you're doing, social justice organizing, and, embracing those causes that the majority of our culture or our society, I should say, does not embrace. Why do you think you're compelled in that way? I mean, do you have an innate sense of justice and through that you're seeing a lot of injustice?
I think that I've always felt like I sort of chafed against institutions, and I've always had a keen sense of illegitimate authority. I've always been a person who wants to question the rules and break the rules if they don't make any sense to me. And I think as I've gotten older and started to understand a lot of more of the implications of the problems in the world today, I think that in some ways it's a form of therapy. I think that, I'm a member of a relatively privileged class. I have white skin. I'm educated and stuff. I could choose to ignore these problems and be relatively okay for the time being, as many people do. But I think that, now that I've looked and I have a sense of the magnitude of what's going on, I think that if I led a life that wasn't engaged, I would always have this uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach. And I still have an uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach, but I think being active and engaged politically makes me feel like I have some degree of control over what's happening.
May I ask, how old are you now?
I am 35. Wait, so, am I? Yeah, I'm 35.
And so, yeah, you're not. This is not just some sort of phase you're going through. This is a part of who you are as an individual, for sure. It seems to me, because when we're young, a lot of folks, it's easier to be idealistic, because oftentimes, especially when you're from the privileged class that I am, and you are part of. Male, white, and a couple other things we could probably attach to that. It's easy to be sheltered from some of the challenges and just be idealistic, the real challenges out there. And then once you want to become part of the mass culture, the norm, so to speak, you could, and often people do, because it's easier. Yeah. And but you haven't, and I personally commend you for that, you probably would say, well, you have no choice because that's who you are, and as you just described, it seems that you would be unhappy if you didn't do what you are indeed doing. So I guess the next thing I would get to is, why do you think most other people aren't? Is it because it's too hard to seek social justice, to question the rules, to question authority? Or do they not see it at all? Do they not sense it?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure that I have the answer, but I guess what I think is that, it's easy to choose the path of least resistance, and I think that often the strongest social movements have come from communities where their back was to the wall. They were being actively exterminated, basically. And it's for them, they were just like, we have no choice. We have to resist. We have to struggle or die, basically. And for those of us who have the, I mean, I guess some would call it a luxury, others might call it a curse, the privilege to be able to sit back and relax and not struggle, and everything will be more or less okay. I think it's easy for a lot of people to choose the path of least resistance, and it's hard, it's punishing. For anyone who stands up to power, there's punishment. People are jailed every day for protest and civil disobedience. Some people get, really hefty sentences for that type of thing. And I think that more and more, it's always been criminalized, and I think it will be even further criminalized as time goes along. And well, I lost my train of thought, but that's probably enough of an answer.
No, that works. I think that was a very coherent response to my question. I appreciated Casey Pegg on the program, Troubadours and Rock on Tours, social justice organizer, among other things. And I think this is about the third time you've been on the program, maybe the fourth, but I think it's been the third, right?
The third, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to more conversations with you in the future. Is it enough to call you a social organizer, or would you like to be identified with another sort of title or position or what have you?
I generally refer to myself as a community organizer, but I don't know. I mean, I really just think of myself as just a regular person who's trying to figure all this stuff out, like anyone else. And I don't want to set myself apart from other people, because I think it's everybody's responsibility to be engaged and try to work out the problems confronting human civilization, daunting though it may be.
Very, very much so. Now, I like to switch gears a little bit, because before you know it, our time will be up for this go-around. The other thing I'd like to get into with you is your, I guess it's a choice to consider yourself gender non-binary, right? I was reading your bio, and I'm using pronouns of they and them, and I'm hoping you'll be able to give myself and many of our listeners some insight as to what that means and why it's important to you to be looked at or to be considered, identified as gender non-binary.
Yeah. Well, when you messaged me before the show and kind of lighted on that topic, I was interested by that, and I'm happy to talk about it. I think I don't actually get the opportunity to talk or think about it enough. So, I guess first a disclaimer. I think a lot of people, you know, who identify as genderqueer or gender nonconforming or non-binary or trans, I think everybody has a different conception of what that means. So my ideas about what that means does not represent everyone. And that's kind of the point, actually. That's all okay. When I was growing up, I think I always sort of, I mentioned that I kind of chafed against rules. So I also kind of chafed against gender rules. I was like, okay, so I'm a boy, but why can't I learn how to sew? Or why can't I wear a dress and stuff like that? And I think for most of my life, I have identified as a cisgender man. And what that means is, the way that I identify myself and think about myself is, you know, what cisgender means is my chosen identity is consistent with what was written on my birth certificate, basically, as opposed to transgender, which means that some people would say that it means that you have gender dysphoria, which means that the way that you think about yourself, or you experience gender dysphoria, which means the way that you think about yourself and choose to identify is different from what's written on your birth certificate, essentially, or the way that you are perceived by people. So as an adult, I kind of recognize these tendencies within myself, and I talked to somebody about it, and I was like, hey, maybe I'm one of those non-binary people. And this person was like, well, you should think about it, you know, before you make that decision, why don't you see if you can be male in a way that's fits the way that you want to be in the world and kind of pushes the boundaries of what it means to be male. I mean, there's no rule that says that men can't wear dresses or whatever. So I tried that for a while, but then I think just over time, the category of maleness just kind of started to collapse for me, and it stopped seeming like a relevant or coherent concept for me. And so I, at one point, I was just like, I'm just going to ask people to start calling me they and them instead of he. And been doing that ever since.
Now, this is strictly for my understanding, this question, and maybe it's too personal and you don't have to answer it. You are listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on Radio Free Brooklyn. But does any of what we're talking about here have to do with sexual orientation?
Yeah, kind of. Well, I mean, I am mainly attracted to cisgender women. So, I mean, I always considered myself a straight man, basically. And I think that it's important to say that sexual orientation and gender identity are two separate things. Mm-hmm. So, but they're not entirely separate, because I've talked to other gender nonconforming people, and, you know, and they're like, okay, well, if, you know, if you don't identify as a man, then, you know, liking women doesn't make you straight anymore, or you shouldn't identify as heterosexual necessarily. And then for me, it's also kind of strange to think about, well, if I don't recognize two genders for myself, then why am I only attracted to cisgender women? And I continue to think about it. I'm not sure that it really makes sense, but it doesn't necessarily have to.
Right, exactly. I mean, the big thing for me when I'm trying to understand is the whole judgment and trying to fit people into categories, which is wrong, you know, in my opinion. Trying to fit people into categories and judging that they're right or they're on, you know, they're being reasonable or whatever the case may be. Having said that, I know a lot of folks from my own experiences and conversations personally and just, you know, listening to the larger discussion regarding being gender nonconformist and sexual orientation and all of this. What about those who say, oh, this is so confusing. Why do you confuse it so much? What's the point of all this? How would you respond to that mentality?
Can you say a little more about that, maybe where that's coming from?
Well, there are a lot of folks, once they start hearing people that are more, you know, they consider themselves traditional in the way that they look at who they are with regard to sexual orientation, sex, gender, all of those different categories. And I know they overlap, but they also are separate. And then when they hear folks say, well, you know, I'm like how you're sharing your take on things. You're cisgender as compared to transgender, and what your preferences are with regard to sexual orientation or your sexual attraction, I should say. And then they get all and you start using the words they and them instead of he, she, and they start saying, well, this is so confusing. Why would anybody want to confuse all of this? And they get frustrated. And the reason I bring this up is so that we can address that directly. You know, the frustration often when people are, as you know, given your work, I'm sure, the frustration usually is what leads to the pushback or the criticism of something that when people don't understand, they get nervous, they get afraid. So how do you respond to that fear, that sense of, wow, I don't understand what the heck you're trying to make me believe or change?
Yeah. Well, I think the tendency to get disgruntled with things that are foreign to you and that you don't understand is a perfectly understandable human tendency. I don't think that excuses it. I think that I guess what I would say is, you know, think of it as an opportunity to broaden your horizons. Also, if you don't understand it, that's okay. Like if you don't understand why I want you to call me they and them instead of he, then you don't necessarily need to. Just call me they and them and don't worry about it. I mean, you know, one doesn't need to understand or endorse somebody else's religious views in order to support their right to practice their religion. So, you know, I was thinking about this, and I think that something what's happening that's interesting is that I think gender was really, you know, throughout Western history was really considered more of a public affair. And I think in modern times, it's kind of becoming more private, more governed by the individual than the public. And I think that's okay because it really doesn't, you know, I don't think it hurts anyone. And I can understand why that would be upsetting for people who are invested in the traditional way of doing things. But at the same time, you know, I think people sometimes think that it's really frivolous, and it's really not. I mean, my case is that, you know, I'm not so unhappy with being looked upon and referred to as a man, but I think that I know that other people experience a much higher degree of gender dysphoria, to the extent that they really just can't be happy living by society's expectations, and they absolutely have to express their true identity. And I think that's great. And I think that when I know that when people do that, they expose themselves to a lot of reactionary violence. And so I guess my point is that as a society, learning to think about this differently and to have different behaviors and social practices around it is really important for people who are experiencing that type of violence and experiencing that type of repression.
You handled that difficult question very, very well. I appreciate it, Casey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, believe it or not, we're just about out of time this go around with Casey R. Pegg, community organizer, social justice activist, I'm going to call you as well. Wonderful conversation. Any closing thoughts or insights you'd like to share with the listeners? Anything coming up? Any contact information as well you'd like to share?
Yeah. I want to plug Mondragon Bookstore, the independent bookstore that I'm a part of. And I want to plug Shouts and Whispers, this podcast that I'm doing with my friend Joanne. And if you want, you can look me up on Facebook. It's Casey R. Pegg. The R is what distinguishes me from the other Casey Peggs out there. And my Twitter handle is Casey_Pegg. That's CASEY_PEGG. And I'll post about Mondragon and about the podcast and about Listen Up, which is the social justice organization that I'm helping to get established too. So yeah, check me out.
Great. And how about a bit of wisdom?
I was reading the Tao Te Ching, and I love the way that it says that the worst type of leader is one who is feared. The second best is the one who is loved. But the best type of leader is the one who nobody even realizes that they're there half the time. That the person who leads and then the people afterwards, the people who they've led say, oh, we did this all by ourselves.
I love it. Thank you so much. I love the Tao Te Ching myself. Casey R. Pegg, a pleasure as always talking with you. And I look forward to talking with you again in the future. Good luck with everything.
Same to you, man. Thanks for talking to me. Always a pleasure.
Ciao.
Reason to friends not to trust. Now everybody that's broke can get the fuck on the ground. See, we thought that we saw that he had a gun. Thought that it looked like he started to run. Thought that we saw that he had a gun. Thought that it looked like he started to run.
Sentimental Education. Honey West, one of my earliest memories. Anne Francis as a sexy secret agent, her face looming above me from the TV screen. I'm with my soon-to-be brother-in-law's brother, a future sad case, and we're waiting for the rehearsal dinner for my sister's marriage. I'm not happy about the marriage, but Honey comforts me. Her show lasted only one season. In my life, she lingers forever, like a super potent spy perfume. Miss Judy. She takes me to the land of Hatchie Malachi, where I learn things about myself and about the world. As she preaches kindness and consideration and thoughtfulness, she seems distant. I can learn from her, but cannot love her. The Bradley sisters from Petticoat Junction, Betty Joe and Bobby Joe and Billy Joe. During the credits for the show, they bathe in the town's water tank and jauntily grab their towels before this week's hijinks ensue. Were the Bradley girls frolicking in the town's water supply? What did the townspeople think? I think of the naked girls in water on my TV. Even the name of the town, a backwater peopled by rubes, conjures erotic notions. Miss McCurry, my kindergarten teacher at Whittier Elementary School, my last public school before I'm placed in the care of nuns. Miss McCurry, in my memory, looks like the Mary Tyler Moore of the Dick Van Dyke Show, but perhaps I'm mixing memories. However, the hair, the smile, the eyes. I am deeply in love with her. Laura Petrie, played by Mary Tyler Moore. Seen on reruns of the Dick Van Dyke Show on sick days and during the summer, dancing in her black capris, adoring her husband Rob, the TV writer, who spent his days conjuring jokes with Maury Amsterdam, steeped in borscht, and Sally, a funny dame, played by the sassy Rose Marie. Sally was one of the guys. Laura was a wife. Ellie Mae Clampett, one of the clan of the Beverly Hillbillies, more televisual hayseeds. Cousin to Jethro, daughter to Jed, granddaughter to Granny. Blonde, pigtailed, crop-shirted, naive, animal-loving, frisky, and an old maid at 19. Another country girl, alluring to the audience for 9 seasons, to me, and, I suspect, to the button-down Miss Hathaway, the banker's secretary. Lola Falana, Joey Heatherton, and Margaret. Singers, dancers, showgirls, comedians, sex kittens. They could do it all. Strutting and belting on variety shows on the three networks, or touring Southeast Asia with the leering Bob Hope. Nuns, so many nuns, so many years of so many nuns, fiercely intelligent, belligerently faithful, sometimes stern, sometimes kind. You never know which you would encounter or which entranced you most, the sternness or the kindness. Black stocking brides of Christ with just a trace of hair peeking through their post-Vatican II hairbands. Agent 99. Pouty Barbara Feldman purred to her nincompoop colleague, Maxwell Smart. She was, of course, the smarter one, but she adored her dumb man. Another spy I loved. Jaime the robot loved her too. Samantha, the witch on Bewitched. The campy guest stars, Agnes Moorehead, Paul Lind, Alice Ghostly, and the dual Darrens, Dick York and Dick Sargent, intrigued me as much as Elizabeth Montgomery, who played the witch. My favorite role of hers was in a TV movie about Lizzie Borden, in which she strips off her bloody clothes after giving her mother and father 40 whacks with an axe. Catwoman. Julie Newmar on Batman. Slinky feline criminal in a form-fitting catsuit. Meows and puns and goofy henchmen. She broke Batman's heart. And maybe Robin's. The boy wonder surely had his secrets. Perhaps he preferred Eartha Kitt's Catwoman. Ginger and Marianne. The Marilyn Monroe Mankay and the corny Kansas farm girl. Two poles of American womanhood stranded on a desert island with a grouchy skipper, his dim first mate, a snobby rich couple, and an endlessly inventive professor. In a forgotten stash of girly mags, in a basement, I discovered a spread of Tina Louise. To my confusion and delight, there was Ginger, in grainy black and white, in lingerie, in the nude, photographed when she was a striving starlet, some years before the fateful voyage of the Minnow. Gilligan would have killed the skipper or Mr. Howell for a copy of that magazine. Jeannie. A genie with a midriff-bearing harem outfit and a cozy, pillow-filled apartment-slash-cell in a bottle. Barbara Eden played the helpmate, consort, and frustrated lover of the hapless astronaut, Major Anthony Nelson, played by Larry Hagman, the son of Mary Martin, who played Peter Pan. The space age meets the seraglio. Jeannie calls the Major Master. That girl, Marlo Thomas as Anne Marie, a kooky actress from New Rochelle trying to make it in the big city. An indomitable spirit, out on auditions and madcap mini-adventures. Marlo Thomas reminded me of my sister, who left home and got married. I forgave my sister for abandoning me. Who could stay mad at that girl? Mary Richards, a working girl in the city, played by Mary Tyler Moore, no longer married in TV life, to Dick Van Dyke. By the time she tossed her blue knit beret in the air and turned the world on with her smile, my sentimental education was well underway.
Bottomless pool.
quite long. Savage lace graces your midriff, as I surmise the wisdom of looking there too long. Happen stance has put in such close proximity my eyes, your stomach, and that simply sensuous panty line through your jean shorts, instead of a tepid thong. Oh, my, this past winter was quite long. And there you have it, episode 266 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, our good friend Casey R. Pegg, social justice organizer. Keep up the good work, my friend. I'd also like to thank our associate producer and resident essayist, Dr. Michael Pavese, for another wonderful piece. And these musical artists: Vampire Weekend, Sarah Jaffe, Benjamin Booker, the B-52s, Fontella Bass, and of course Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Terrence Blanchard, and Branford Marsalis too. Until next week, enjoy this one. Thanks for listening.